ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Hare Krishna. So we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 12, Text 56, 57, and 58. Yuyan Vijagraya Bhataburi Bhagam. Yuyam Vijagraya Bhataburi Bhagam.
Yuyam Vijagraya Bhataburi
Bhagam. Yachashvatmani Akhilatma Bhutam.
Yachashvatmani Akhilatma Bhutam.
Yachashvatmani Akhilatma Bhutam. Narayana Devam Adevam Isham.
Narayana Devam Adevam Isham.
Narayana Devam Adevam Isham.
Narayana Devam Adevam Isham.
Ajasya Bhava Bhajata Avite Avivesham.
Ajasya Bhava Bhajata
Ajasya Bhava Bhajata Avivesham.
Ajasya Bhava Bhajata Avivesham.
Yuyam Vijagraya Bhataburi Bhagam.
Yuyam Vijagraya Bhataburi Bhagam.
Yachashvadatmani Akhilatma Bhutam. Narayanam Devam Adevam Isham.
Narayanam Devam Adevam Isham.
Ajasya Bhava Bhajata Avivesham.
Ajasya Bhava Bhajata Avivesham. Yuyam Vijagraya Bhataburi Bhagam. Narayanam Devam Adevam Isham.
Ajasya Bhava Bhajata Avivesham. Anybody else? Okay. So, translation and purport. Actually, no purport. Sorry. All right. So,
Yuyam.
All of you.
Dvija Agrayam.
O most eminent of Brahmanas.
Bhatam.
Indeed.
Buribhagam.
Extremely fortunate.
Yad.
Because.
Shashvat.
Constantly.
Atmani.
In your hearts.
Akilam.
Of all.
Atmabhutam.
Who is the ultimate soul?
Narayanam.
Lord Narayan.
Devam.
The personality of Godhead.
Adevam.
Beyond whom there is no other God.
Isham.
The Supreme Controller.
Ajashram.
Without interruption.
Bhavam.
Having love.
Bhajatam.
You should worship.
Avivesham.
Placing him. Translation. O most eminent of Brahmanas, you are all indeed extremely fortunate, since you have already placed within your hearts Lord Shri Narayan, the personality of Godhead, the supreme controller and the ultimate soul of all existence, beyond whom there is no other God. You have undeviating love for him, and thus I request you to worship him. Text 57, we can chant together.
Aham chasam samrita atmatatvam shrutam purame paramashivatra prayopaveshe nikute parikshta sadasirishna mahatam chashanvatam.
Translation. I also have now been fully reminded of the science of God, which I previously heard from the mouth of the great sage Shukadeva Goswami. I was present in the assembly of the great sages who heard him speak to King Parikshit as the monarch sat fasting until death. And text 58.
Etadva katitam vipram katani yoru karmanam mahatmyam vasudevasyam sarva shubha vinashanam.
O Brahmanas, I have thus described to you the glories of the Supreme Lord Vasudev, whose extraordinary activities are most worthy of glorification. This narration destroys all that is inauspicious.
Yuyam vijagraya bhataburi bhagam yachashvadatmani akhilatma bhutam narayanam deva madeva misham ajashabhava bhajata avivesham.
O most eminent of Brahmanas, you are all indeed extremely fortunate, since you have already placed within your hearts Lord Shri Narayan, the personality of Godhead, the supreme controller and the ultimate soul of all existence, beyond whom there is no other God. You have unwavering love for him, and thus I request you to worship him. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sinubhevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Ghor Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So in this chapter, Sutta Goswami is summarizing the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. And he's saying to the assembled brahmanas very, very important points here. He's saying this narration destroys all that is inauspicious. And he also said, you are indeed extremely fortunate. Two very important points. And what else he said? He said, I have now been also reminded of the science of God. He said, I was present. I was present when Shukadeva Goswami was speaking to Maharaj Parikshit. But now that I have told it again to you, I have also been reminded, which kind of points out the importance of Shravanam and Kirtanam. So we hear attentively, but then also it's essential that we also speak what we heard. That process is so scientific, because by speaking what we heard, those shastric points, they become more ingrained in our heart. So by sharing with other devotees, by sharing with people in general, our realization actually becomes deeper and our faith becomes stronger. So one thing was kind of in my mind prevailing when I was reading these verses. So Sutta Goswami is telling to the assembled brahmanas, you are extremely fortunate. And when we think about it, what does that mean, extremely fortunate? So just imagine you walk on the streets in Gainesville and you say, my dear sir, today we are interviewing you. We are here from CNN and we are interviewing everybody to see who is the most fortunate person. Are you the most fortunate person? And if not, what would make you most fortunate? So what do you think people would say? Anybody have any guess? Yes, please. Okay, I need to win the lottery to become most fortunate. Anybody else would like to comment? Don't be shy. Yeah.
I like to have better relationships.
Better relationships.
Good relationships.
That's very, very important. So typically in this world, especially around this time, people are rushing to work. Everybody is in the stress. They have a long list of, you know, of the items they need to accomplish today. So they're full of anxiety. They typically rush in the morning without proper breakfast, and then work hard, then come back in the evening, and, you know, depending on the family they're in, they may have a peaceful family life, or it may be a turbulent one, we don't know. But in general, people have idea of being extremely fortunate, like something distant in the future. Someday, you know, after I work hard and I retire, I will be extremely fortunate. But now I have to work hard and that will come in the future. So it's interesting here to point out that when Sutta Goswami, he is saying to these assembled brahmanas that you are extremely fortunate, he's not really putting in consideration the material gain or loss, that's not really what he's referring to. Even if we kind of reflect in the process of karma kanda, people have the idea, I will be performing pious activities, and some days I will descend to the heavens, and then I will be extremely fortunate. Or in jnana yoga, you know, you may think, one day there will be liberation, and you know, we will be free from material miseries. But in bhakti yoga, it's totally different and quite mysterious, I would say. So let's a little bit reflect on that. After Kamsa heard that Krishna is already appeared, basically, you know, he was waiting, you know, killing each baby of Devaki and thinking like, you know, I will make sure that that child never takes even birth, because he heard that prophecy that he will be killed by the Devaki's child. So one day Narada Muni comes and he tells him, my dear Kamsa, you know, that child is already present and he is hidden in Vraj. So Kamsa now is, you know, like thinking, oh my God, well, you know, he didn't say that. He was thinking like, I need to do something. So he already sent so many demons, they all got killed in Vrindavan. So finally he decides to do that huge sacrificial performance. And he thought, okay, I will bring Krishna and Balaram here, and then I will make sure that, you know, that will be the end of them. So he calls Akrura and he tells him, my dear friend, you are the most trusted of my associates. You are the best of all of the Yadu dynasty. Please, I have to beg charity from you. I have a great need, and only you can accomplish that. Please go to Vraj and bring Krishna and Balaram here to Mathura. And he was straightforward. He said, you know, I have a plan. When Krishna and Balaram come here, I will have elephant Kuvalyapida and wrestlers, you know, in the case if they pass the gate with the elephant. I don't think they will, but if they do, then I will have these strong wrestlers who will definitely kill Krishna and Balaram. And he said, that way I will get rid of all of my opposition, and then I will rule and be happy. So Kamsa had the same idea. He wanted to be extremely fortunate, but it was quite the opposite. He was apparently non-stop in an anxiety. His mind was never peaceful. So, as we know, Akrura, he goes to Vraj, and he brings Krishna and Balaram. When they were just about to enter the gates of Mathura, Krishna and Balaram, they got off the chariot. And Akrura said, my dear lords, please, you know, please come with me, come to my home. I cannot go, you know, inside without you. And Krishna said, my dear Akrura, I will definitely visit your home, but first I have to kill all the demons who are enemies of the Yadu dynasty. So being, you know, dedicated and humble servant of the Lord, Akrura accepted, although he was a little bit, you know, sad that, you know, he wanted really to serve the Lord in his home. So nevertheless, he accepted the Lord's plan, and he went to his house. Krishna and Balaram proceeded to Mathura. And now let's kind of go in chronological order and see what happened. So first thing, Krishna, he went inside and broke the bow, sacrificial bow, which Kamsa was guarding with many guards. And, you know, Krishna just picked it up and easily and destroyed it. just to kind of, you know, show that he's there. And Kamsa even more got fearful. He sent soldiers to attack Krishna, but Krishna just wanted to, give him a little hint of his power, just a little small hint. And that night, Kamsa was totally bewildered. He couldn't sleep. He was turning left and right in complete anxiety. And he had inauspicious dreams. And he was just like, turning back and forth, totally, totally disturbed. So he could feel actually his death has finally arrived. So the next day, as we know, Krishna enters Mathura, and there was elephant Kavalyapida, and he forcefully attacked the lords Krishna and Balaram. And after quick battle, Krishna easily killed the elephant, and then he proceeded to the arena where the wrestlers were, Chanura and Mushtika. So all the citizens were saying, this is not fair. These are young boys, and look at you, big men wrestling, such young boys. And they were still no match for the Lord. Krishna and Balaram easily defeated them. And I actually skipped a few things. That's right. So I'm going to retrace a few steps back. Before Krishna entered the arena, who did he meet? Kubja. Who else? Washerman. Did Washerman do what was Krishna asking? Did he give the cloth? No. So he was kind of like, totally in illusion. And he thought, oh, I'm servant of Kamsa. I cannot give you these clothes. And Krishna, killed him. So then he met who?
Taylor.
And then
from the laundryman he got the clothes.
Okay.
The clothes went to Taylor.
Okay, and then he met florist.
Garland maker.
Right. Okay. And garland maker, he was great devotee. He made beautiful garlands for the lords. And after the Lord was very pleased with him, he offered him benediction. And what did florist ask? He said, my dear Lord, may I be your servant life after life. And may I with that service please all the living entities. May I with that service serve all the living beings in this world. Prabhupada points out that that's actually very, very important, because we can see that six Goswamis actually they follow in the same footsteps. Basically, they follow that example. So devotee always is looking to serve the other people by performing his devotional service. So anyhow, so then what happened? Krishna then finally entered the wrestling arena and killed the wrestlers.
Next day morning.
Okay. So you can see there's several things happening. And after the wrestlers were killed, Kamsa got up and he said, arrest these two boys and also arrest Nanda Maharaj and kill them all. And he was totally in rage of anger and fear combined, and he was totally a lost man. So he was thinking like he's gonna just kill everybody, Krishna and Balaram and Nanda and Vasudev. He was just thinking just to get rid of everybody. And at that point, Krishna easily jumped on the podium where he was sitting and easily killed him. And that was the end of the Kamsa. So, Haribol, that's right. So then what happened afterwards? Basically, after some time, Vrijabhasis, they returned to Vrindavan. And Vasudev, he wanted to perform the initiation ceremony for his boys. And basically, they got sacred initiation. And it's described they also spend some time in the ashram of their spiritual master. And as we heard, Krishna delivered the son of his spiritual master. You may be wondering, you know, why I'm going through all these events, but I will tell you in a minute. So just be patient. So, and then after that, as we know, Krishna sends Uddhava to Vraj because he knew that the residence of Vraj would be in so much separation from him. So he sent Uddhava, and Uddhava spent some time there. And then after Uddhava returned, it's described, Krishna then spent several days. You know, it wasn't just like a quick half-hour report. Okay, this is what happened. No, Krishna was eagerly listening from Uddhava for days. He wanted to know what, you know, how are the residents of Raj? How are his parents, Nanda and Yashoda, doing? How are the gopis? So Krishna was listening attentively for several days. So now you can see so many things happened. But you remember what was happening in the beginning of the story? Krishna promised Akrura he will come to his home. And do you think Krishna forgot about that? No, he did not. Can you imagine, we forget, you know, even what we were doing, like, you know, last week, you know, just imagine, like, you know, so many things happened, so many events happened, but Krishna did not forget that he promised to visit Akrura. So then he visits Kubja, and then he visits Akrura. And Akrura was so, so happy. And looking for the exact words here. Anyhow, but essentially, Akrura receives the Lord in very, very wonderful way, and he offers the prayers. And then he said to the Lord, he said, "Today I am most fortunate person." And exactly the same words we are hearing in the verse we are reading today. So Akrura is saying, "Today I am most fortunate person." So that is the way of devotional life. You know, sometimes we may think, you know, why does Krishna not reciprocate? You know, why is this happening to me? And you may ask, you know, I'm devotee, why is this happening to me? I'll share one thing that happened to me when I was, you know, practically new bhakta, maybe 2 years in a movement. I was in Berlin, Germany, and we were going out every day, and most of the devotees, they were distributing books, but I couldn't speak German. You know, it's not my mother language. So the devotees, they just wrote me on a piece of paper, you know, a few sentences, and I was going out with prasadam. And most interestingly, they told me to sell papadams. And I still don't know why in the world papadams. So I was going out every day, and I had a few spots, kind of like on a subway station, where people, you know, basically it's underground subway. So you, like in New York, basically you come to the station, you go underground, you pick your subway or train and you go to wherever you need to go. So I was going to the same spot every day, and first week it was okay, I did pretty well. You know, second week it kind of got a little bit harder, and maybe after 2 weeks I couldn't sell any papadam. And I remember one day I was going back and forth, like I would say literally for about 4 hours, I couldn't sell one papadam. And I was totally heartbroken. I was feeling like crying. I was thinking, Krishna, did you forget me? Like, you know, I'm trying to be your devotee. You said in Bhagavad Gita, susukam aryavam, you know, this process is, you know, this knowledge is king of all knowledge, and it's performed joyfully. And I'm reading, you know, books about you, and you said, man mana bhava, mad bhakto, become my devotee, always think of me. And I was thinking, I'm doing all of that, Krishna, and look how miserable I am. So I remember I sat on some bench nearby and I was about to cry. I didn't know what to do. So finally, after, you know, maybe half hour, I got my head straight and I realized the mind is just playing the tricks on me. And I was thinking, like, of course Krishna didn't forget me. I mean, how could I forget him? How could I forget all the wonderful times I had so far in Krishna consciousness? How could I forget all the wonderful Vaishnavas that were so merciful and kind to me? You know, just because of a few hours of struggle, I already pretty much gave up on the Lord. So, you know, my intelligence and my mind were fighting in that way. So, I don't know, maybe it happened to you sometime as well. You think like, my dear Lord, you know, I've been, you know, your devotee for so many years, but why is this happening to me? You know, generally, like, you know, we think like, you know, my dear Lord, my name is Bhakta so-and-so. Here's the list of things I would like to happen to me. And here's the list of things I don't want to happening to me. And then devotees tell us, wait a second, that's not really real exchange of love. You can't be really demanding when Krishna will reciprocate and how he will reciprocate. So anyhow, back to our story. So Krishna is visiting Akrura, and after, you know, the wonderful exchange, then Krishna expresses his mind. And we can see the Lord is always very, very mysterious. He accomplishes many things simultaneously. Like he's visiting Akrura, but, you know, simultaneously he also has a plan to take care of his other devotees, which were Pandavas. So he's saying to Akrura, my dear Akrura, you are the well-wisher and our best friend, and you are always working for the good fortune of others. And he said, please go to Hastinapur and observe the situation there. I have heard that the 5 Pandavas, since their father passed away, are left under the care of Dhritarashtra. And I also have heard that Dhritarashtra is not only blind from the birth, but is also blinded by his affection for his evil son, Duryodhana. So he said, Akrura, please go there and study the situation. It's explained that Akrura is very, very intelligent in the political science and science of diplomacy. So the Lord picked him as a perfect person to accomplish that task. So anyhow, Akrura finally arrives in Hastinapur, and he decides to spend there several months. It's described that he was carefully observing political situation and, you know, the dealings between the family members, between the Pandavas and Kuru's, Duryodhana's sons. He met with many, many important personalities in the Kuru kingdom. He met with, of course, with Vidura, Bhishma, Duryodhana, Karna, all the Ashwatthama, all these great personalities there. So After a while, one day he was with the Queen Kunti. It was him and Vidura, and they were basically inquiring about Kunti's well-being and the well-being of her five sons. So I kind of wanted to share this with you. I find it quite amazing because I was thinking, like, you know, I'm 2 year old Bhakta, so no wonder I was questioning, you know, did the Lord forget me? But here we will find interesting situation. Queen Kunti, who is exalted personality, she's also questioning, did the Lord forget us? Does he even still remember us? So listen carefully. So this is Queen Kunti speaking. Thinking of her birthplace and beginning to cry, she asked Akrura whether her father, mother, brothers, sisters, and other friends at home still remembered her. She especially inquired about Krishna and Balaram, her glorious nephews. She asked, does Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is very affectionate to his devotees, remember my sons? Does Balaram remember us? Inside herself, Kunti felt like a she-deer in the midst of tigers. And actually, her position was like that. After the death of her husband, King Pandu, she was supposed to take care of the five Pandava children, but the sons of Dhritarashtra were always planning to kill them. She was certainly living like a poor, innocent animal in the midst of several tigers. Being devotee of Lord Krishna, she always thought of him and expected that one day Krishna would come and save them from their dangerous position. Talking with Akrura about all these affairs, she felt herself helpless and exclaimed, "My dear Krishna, my dear Krishna, you are the supreme mystic, the super soul of the universe. You are the real well-wisher of the whole universe. My dear Govinda, at this time you are far away from me, yet I pray to surrender unto your lotus feet. I am now grief-stricken with my five fatherless sons. I can fully understand that by your lotus feet there is no, I can fully understand that but for your lotus feet there is no shelter or protection. Your lotus feet can deliver all aggrieved souls because you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One can be saved from the clutches of repeated birth and death by your mercy only." And then she said, "What can I say? I can simply offer my respectful obeisance unto you. Accept me as your fully surrendered devotee." So then Prabhupada goes on to explain one very, very important point. He's saying, although Krishna was not physically present there, Queen Kunti was praying to him like he was present. And then he's saying, Prabhupada is saying, this is possible for anyone, anyone. Anyone means you and me, isn't it? Anyone. This is possible for anyone following in the footsteps of Kunti. Krishna does not have to be physically present everywhere. He is actually present everywhere by spiritual potency, and one simply has to surrender unto him sincerely. So now we heard these two examples, and we know in the life of Queen Kunti, how many struggles did she go through? First, when she was young, she had a child accidentally that she had to get rid of, which was Karna. How many mothers could bear that, you know, firstborn child? And you have to basically get rid of the firstborn child. Then later on, when she was married, her husband passed away unexpectedly. And she was left with five children. You know, how difficult it is just to raise one or two kids, but imagine five. And then after all that, you know, when she was under the care of Dhritarashtra, she was constantly in anxiety because they were trying to kill her children. You know, can you imagine living like that? You know, you, every day you don't know if, you know, you're going to be killed or not. So many struggles. And on top of everything, what was her consciousness? There is one particular verse that I like. And we know she offers beautiful prayers to the Lord in the first canto. But this one is kind of like really nice. And she's saying, Tvajime manaya vishaya matir madhu pate sikrit ratim udva hatat ada ganga vagam udanvati. O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anyone else. So, wonderful example that we can all aspire to follow. I know it's getting late. I just wanted to share one more little thing and then we will end. Since we had the Janmashtami just a few days ago, I read a wonderful, wonderful article by Satchinandan Swami, and I thought, I must share this with you, what is. And Satchinandan Swami is speaking about exactly the same thing that we are discussing in these verses. You know, everybody in this world wants to be fortunate. If you ask anybody, sir, do you want to be happy? Of course, nobody's going to say, no, I don't care whether I'm happy or not. So everybody's seeking for that. And here's what Satchinandan Swami is saying. He said, deep inside, every human being feels a calling toward better life and ultimately a greater understanding of the self. The Atma or self is actually only satisfied when the individual soul meets the Supreme Soul and serves him with loving devotion. Janmashtami is the answer to this most vital calling. And then he goes on to explain why. He said, the appearance of Lord Janmashtami did not take place only once long, long ago in ancient India. So it did not happen only once. He said, it takes place again and again at all times, everywhere and anywhere. Out of those constant reoccurring appearances, the most wonderful is when Lord Krishna appears in the heart, in our heart. So that is also Lord's appearance. And then he goes on to explain, how does God appear so personally for the individual, for me and you? He said, the all-attractive is attracted to soul when bhakti or devotion to Krishna manifests in the heart. And then he goes on quoting several verses. But the final point, which I wanted to share with you, he said, and by the way, he is referring to the Narada Bhakti Sutras while writing this article. And his concluding point is, he's saying, Narada Muni has one final point to make on how the devotee can attract Krishna to his or her heart. These are his reassuring words. So, listen. He said, primarily, however, one develops bhakti by the mercy of great souls or by small drop of Krishna's mercy. With this, he clearly indicates that Krishna and Krishna consciousness are beyond all mechanical practices. Beyond all mechanical practices. So it's not like, you know, you can just mechanically get there. And he says, It is always a gift from above. And then he says, let us pray on the divine appearance day of Krishna, that he gives us his unlimited mercy, overlooking our faults and mistakes. And let us also pray to his great devotees in the same way. So, I'll stop here. Thank you so much for your attention. If anybody would like to comment, offer any critiques and reflections, please.
I have a question.
Yes, please.
On the translation, what I remember, it says that since the Lord Narayan is placed in your heart, so Paramatma was there, so who placed the Narayan in his heart and how? And then, end of the translation, I'm just paraphrasing, I don't remember exactly. He became fortunate. Okay. As a result of fortunate, and then he says, or the translation says, Sutta Goswami says, that you have love. If somebody already has love, why then he says, you should worship. I advise you, why you need to worship if you already have love? Love is above the worship. So I have these two questions, or maybe one question.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Prabhu. I think that's a very, very important point, and I know you know the answer better than
I
could
idea,
possibly. But the only thing I could comment, basically, Krishna as a super soul, he is in the heart of all living beings, as a Paramatma. But unfortunately, we have forgotten him after many, many lifetimes. So that has to be reawakened. And fortunately, by the mercy of the Vaishnavas and by the causeless mercy of the spiritual master, we get that seed, Bhakti Lata Beach, which kind of starts as a little plant. And, you know, initially it kind of struggles and, you know, like... you know, like a garden in Florida, you know, sometime in the heat of summer, it kind of almost like shrivels and, you know, it's struggling. But then all of a sudden the good weather comes and it starts to blossom and produce flowers and fruit and, you know, becomes a beautiful plant. So similarly, the Lord is always in our heart. But when we consciously turn our face, like that example is given of the two birds sitting on a tree next to each other. So when we actually become awake and aware that the Lord is actually so close to us, we just have to turn our head and worship him with our love and full heart. Then that's you know, a real relationship. But after ignoring him for so many lifetimes, it's sometimes very, very difficult to do. Your second question, you said, since the Lord is already there, and Sutta Goswami is saying, you
have undivided
love. Yeah.
He already has a love. Why you need to worship?
Yeah. And that is actually a very valid point. But the answer would be because that is the exchange. So we may say to someone, I love you so much, but we never do anything for that person. Then what kind of love is that? Like even in material world, if the man tells to woman, I love you so much, but you know, never does anything. You know, after a while, the girl would think, he just talks. He just talks big, but, you know, that's not really love. So there has to be some kind of expression, and that's why Sutta Goswami is saying, thus I request you to worship him, which means serve him, do something. And that is just my comment.
Mother Yashoda, she has so much love that even a moment she cannot live without serving Krishna. Service is natural. Love cannot arise without serving. So I'm just trying to understand that how he already has an undeviated love. Why the suggestion should be, oh, now you serve. Must be serving. That's the nature of the love. Love is not like some kind of a fruit or something on the shelf that when I need, I take it or something. Love is like a heart function. Mm-hmm. The definition given by Rupa Goswami, bhakti tu, sraddha tu anna upaya bharjanam, bhakti unmukhi chitta vritti vishesh. The beginning of this love sprouting, that chitta unmukhi, the function of the heart is to do something to please the Lord. So it's automatically, naturally there. And we're talking about mature of that faith is that love, that they are completely drowned into serving the Lord. So I'm trying to link that after he has the love, why he has to be advised or suggest that please worship now?
I don't know. It seems like when one has love, one wants to serve more. Mm-hmm. And when one serves, one gets the love. So they're kind of like interrelated. And the more we serve, the more love we will develop in our heart. And the more we love the Lord, the more we want to serve. So it's kind of like they go together. Yes, yes, Prabhu.
I try not to belabor it, but we're severely handicapped by the English vocabulary. In Sanskrit, there are six words that are translated as worship. Which one are you referring to? And the term love, the way we exercise love in the material world, it's hardly approachable to what is practiced in the spiritual world. Obviously, there's worship. If you pick the right word. This is the end of chapter
6
in Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada asserts that bhajan means worship, but it's an inadequate terminology. Because it means that when there's a need for service. So whenever there's love, there's service. Even between an infant child, there's some exchange of service. There's always a need for that form of worship in a relationship with the devotee and Krishna. That's how you work with them, that's what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Love means service. And service equates with worship in one of the terminologies. Not just pull out the arti tray and perform puja. Rites and rituals. It's a heartfelt aspect of the expression of love. That's also worship. Actually, that's the principal aspect of worship.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can draw that, but actually love and worship are not the same. Worship, there is a wine reverence.
The worship endowed with wine reverence. There is a submission required. There is a surrender required. And then there is the rituals. But love above all this. I'm going to do a little more word meaning to see why this is translated like that.
All right. Anybody else would like to say something on this side?
Thank you for the very nice class, very inspiring. I was thinking about how you mentioned about Mother Kunti, and her prayers are so so relatable. Mm-hmm. When she's praying to Krishna, she's saying everything what she went through. Mm-hmm. I always find her prayers that we can learn how to pray to Krishna, being in our place. You know, I've gone through so much. This is how you helped me through here when we had such and such, you helped us for this one, you helped us for this, we helped us for in this situation. And so there's such sweet prayers. And then, although I can't relate to the prayer where she says that let these calamities come again and again, mm-hmm. kind of like to skip on that one, but this other prayer, let my mind be always absorbed in you. So mm-hmm. yeah, it's very, very nice. Her prayers are very, very sweet.
And yes, thank you so much. Yeah, definitely. Her praying is so practical and so easily to relate to, you know, especially for us in our stage of devotional life. But like you said, you know, most of us are not on that level to ask for more calamities. But there are many other prayers we can actually borrow from her and use in our daily life. okay, I think we will stop here. Thank you so much. Garantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.